when all you have is a search engine, everything looks like a database.
Let's move on.
Privacy is nothing to be granted. Privacy is something you take yourself.
They've got the Mossad, the CIA, and Hillary Clinton behind them.
We're now beyond what the Stasi could even dream of.
Reality Exploit Roundtable.
Welcome to Reality Exploit Roundtable, Episode 3. Today, your moderator is myself, Hero, and the panelists that we have. Voodoo from the Black and Yellow Pages, Beer Can Engines, Wise Guy, Man with No Name, Smuggler from Anarplex.net, Plato. You can find The Real Plato on Twitter and Reddit. And, of course, I already mentioned myself, which you can find different shows on agoristradio.com or .bit. Today's topics: Agorist Insurance Smart, the Sovereign Mutual Aid Response Team, and Shield Mutual Agorist Insurance, Super Cheap Nano Solar Panels, Failbook Abstainers Might Be Terrorists, and Banana Republics Gone Wild. We're going to start off here with the Agorist Insurance. Well, over the past year, two different organizations have come out with this similar type of system. First one is the Sovereign Mutual Aid Response Team and the Shield Mutual Agorist Insurance. So back in 2011, Jim Davidson of the Individual Sovereign University announced SMART. He's been posting updates with some of the things that they've been doing as in the organization. And then not too long ago, George Donnelly of Agora.io announced his Shield Mutual Agorist Insurance. So both of these companies are offering many overlapping similar services.
So what Shield Mutual does is, we don't have unlimited resources to pay for all the damages that the state does. You know, I'm talking about the community here. We don't have unlimited resources to pay for the lawsuits and whatnot, which may or may not give any kind of relief. But what we do have is publicly. This is not like a traditional, state-registered insurance company, because we don't promise to pay any monetary benefits.
Right.
What we do promise is that, if you are accused of a political crime, we're going to mount a publicity campaign.
The Shield Mutual Agorist Insurance Company, from that clip right there, shows a little bit difference from the other Sovereign Mutual Aid Response Team, because the Sovereign Mutual Aid Response Team have services like they'll ping you, try to contact you every month, and if they don't hear from you, then they'll try to search you out to make that you're okay. If you need bond money, they may help you with that, or legal defense, different things. So both of these sites are actual businesses, some type of mutual aid society mixed with the UCLA and the EFF and an insurance company with the business model, but all from an agorist frame. So you can go to both of these websites and actually send money for monthly or yearly subscriptions. Plato, is there a market for this? And is the business model sustainable? What do you find interesting about these services, and what do you think the future may hold for them?
All right. So is there a market? Yes. And right now it's these two businesses. They're the guys who are offering the services. They make up the market as it exists right now for, agorist mutual aid insurance companies. For future projections, I would favor SMART over SHIELD, because it sounds like they're doing more than just offering publicity. And the reason I think that is because you're paying both companies for their communications infrastructure, and you can do that peer-to-peer for free. Like in Snow Crash, one of the couriers punches a code, and it's this red alert that's broadcast to the courier skater tribe. So they come in and save the day and trash a helicopter. No one's stopping anyone from developing, our own people's red alert system. You figure out, some message protocol, set a peer-to-peer through CJDNS on people's phones. They get the message. They check the signature on the message to see who digitally signed it. You check that digital signature through a trust network. If it's a credible signal, you pass it on to your friends, and maybe, you act on it.
I personally don't think that Jim Davidson's SMART idea is very smart. The problem with any insurance company is that it has to be based on actuarial data, in which you try to determine your likely payouts versus the amount of money that you're going to bring in order to fund the operations. And when you have a self-selected group, I think people would be inclined to get this insurance if they were, thinking that they might be at a higher risk. It turns out to be a similar situation as high-risk medical people trying to get insurance. And when those people are allowed into a system, or the system is focused, the particular service or product is focused on people who are high risk, the actuarial numbers become unsustainable in the sense that if people actually saw what it would cost to defend that kind of self-selected group against certain actions by the state, I think they'd find that they couldn't afford it.
Well, that's absolutely. The key point is going to be, if you're buying one of these insurance policies, you better have a performance bond to go along with it, where you're the whoever's selling you the insurance policy has puts up a bond that you can tag when they don't perform, because we do have a template here. The CD Evolution Fund, started by some of the civil disobedience crowd in New Hampshire, when that was first set up, this was for civil disobedience no matter where it happened in the world. And that was announced by Ian Bernard on Free Talk Live when they were first advertising it, and then suddenly it morphed into, well, no, this is just for New Hampshire guys, because folks who were outside of New Hampshire were doing civil disobedience and they were depleting the fund. So I would worry about that. I'd also worry about, speaking of George Donnelly's publicity campaign, what happens if the action that you took that requires his publicity, he doesn't agree with? Nothing against George Donnelly, but he does have strong opinions on what's right to do and what's wrong to do. If he comes up to one of these things that he thinks is wrong to do, is he going to give you the full measure of his services?
There's another example for those mutual aid and insurance kind of setups, and that is actually the mafia. One of the things the mafia promises their foot soldiers is that the family will take care of the foot soldier in jail, and that wife, children, and so on are protected. So I think it can make a sense if there is a framework, an agreed-on framework, on actions that are actually to be supported by the organization, and a protocol and a means of craft to reduce the risk of being caught and captured and locked up.
I agree with that. But still, in the case of the mafia, you had an organization which had substantial profits and cash flow to support kinds of things that they offered, whereas these mutual aid type of situations, I don't think any of the people who are engaged in these risky behaviors will be willing to spend the kind of money it would take for an insurance company to remain solvent to protect them.
Yeah, I agree.
Let me bring up another thing that the smart people are working on. Jim was talking about this this system called Lodge Care. I'll put the show notes. But what it was a long time ago, before the current medical infrastructure was here, the lodges in the United States were very popular. They're like clubs, country club type things. But if you belong to one of these things, of course, most of them are selective, and you have to pay your entrance fee and then your fees every month. Many of them, in the early part of the century and the last century, would hire a doctor full-time. And then anyone who was a member of the lodge could go and see this doctor at any time for their medical things, and at a free cost. So I think that, you're talking about a mafia, or you're talking about an open system. Many times there's this, like you just mentioned about a cancer patient going and trying to get insurance. I mean, how selective are you with the people coming in? So there's some type of framework that can be worked out here, and all of you guys just brought up some fantastic points. That was great. Let's move on to the next topic here. Super cheap nano solar panels. From the Wired article titled "Nano Breakthrough Paves Way for Super Cheap Solar Panels." It says, one of the reasons solar panels are so expensive is that it's tricky to extract electric currents from semiconductors, the materials used to convert solar radiation into electrical energy. Up till now, this could only be done with a few materials, usually silicon. But a new breakthrough will enable manufacturers to make efficient photovoltaics using almost any semiconductor, including cheap and abundant materials like metal oxides, sulfides, and phosphates. Now, whenever I read about this stuff with advances happening with alternate and new energy things, I see that most solar biz companies out there, startups, stuff that are in the stock markets and the like, they're getting rich with government grants, government direct government subsidies, or government subsidized purchases, promises for those purchases of those products. Like one company doing this nano film, printing out like on printing presses, Nano Solar Corp. They've been around for a few years and they've already burned through $450 million, just raised another $70 million. This is not from sales. This is just people investing. I don't know how much that was from the government, but they still were talking this massive amount of money being, you know, put through. Are any of these solar techs out there something that we're going to be able to use, something that is going to be cheaply produced in spite of monopoly, government monopoly patents that may be there? Is there anything to get excited about here, wise guy?
Well, yes, there is. There's the issue of the cost of the solar panels is certainly something of great importance, especially to people who are operating large arrays or planning to cover their entire rooftops with it. One of the things that's not often mentioned is the cost of the installation. If you've spoken to anyone who's actually in a fairly large PV array on their roof, you'll find that maybe only 20% of the cost of the installation is the PV panels. So if they went zero, it wouldn't change much. Also, most of those systems only make sense even today when they've got some kind of government subsidies. When those go away, well, things will change. So, but getting back to the actual subject, PV array efficiency, germanium was the material used, and you only had 2 or 3%, maybe 5% efficiency. And that's, you know, moved to crystalline silicon, now to thin film silicon, which is not only increased to, you know, the teens or the low 20s in efficiency, but also the cost has dropped dramatically because of research and development. However, all of today's PV cells use some kind of band gap conversion, which means that the light falling on the device converts a certain amount of energy, and it only works really efficiently at the band gap energy, quantum mechanical type of operation. Below the band gap, which is usually they try to position it at the peak spectral efficiency or as peak amount of energy falling on the surface from the sun, which is around, I think, 4,600 Kelvin. Anyway, that's where they try to position the peak for the solar panel. But all of the energy into the yellow and the reds and the infrareds that fall in the solar panel, below that band-gapped energy, it just gets converted to heat. No electricity results. Above the band-gap energy, only a certain percentage, 20 or 30%, actually gets converted to energy. A rest also was wasted. So what needs to happen is, if they're going to actually do an improvement on the solar cells, is one, to get the cost very low. Maybe it'll be like as cheap as trash bags, and that would certainly change things in the developing world. But the other thing they need to do is to actually broaden the spectral range of the system so that they can respond to all of the sunlight. In the 1980s, a guy named Alvin Marks came up with this idea, and his proposal was to build something like a rectenna, a rectifying antenna that would operate optical frequencies. What that meant is that it would be like a radio receiver instead of a quantum mechanical device. Theoretically, those kinds of devices can operate at over 80 or 90% efficiency. But that idea kind of laid fallow. Oh, sorry, I'll just complete here. That idea remained fallow for quite a few years until recently, because nanotechnology and photolithography was not capable of producing the kinds of devices were needed for this. But that's now changing. So I think you're going to see a tremendous amount of activity in photovoltaic panels using non-band gap materials.
Okay, so and that relating to the this nano stuff that was just announced, you really think that we are going to see something coming about within the next couple of years that is going to be where it's down to the almost the cost and availability and flexibility and usability of, which is, like you said, trash bags for the common guy?
Exactly, but I think it'll affect the developing world more than it'll affect the developed world. In the developed world, using solar panels, for instance, on your house, involves all kinds of regulations and restrictions, and you got to get approvals, you know, from the community or the city. Where in developing world, you just put it on the top of your, you know, lean-to, and you use the power.
Awesome. Other panelists, do you have comments on this?
Wise guy, you were talking about how, you know, it takes time and time to get the infrastructure up and running so that we have solar companies that can make it to print it as cheap as trash bags. Just wanted to point out that it's not profitable to the guys who have enough money to make that happen, because they can just get, 10 times the money by investing in oil. And the market should be pricing oil so high that we don't, burn it all and emit CO2 and scorch the earth. But the market doesn't price it because it's so distorted by state intervention. And this innovation that NanoSolar did is really big. It's thin film solar. Like, they put a sheet of mylar on a roll that's 100 feet long and feed it through a machine, and out comes an inkjet printed solar panel. And that's awesome. But it's going to take apparently $450 million and probably a lot more to, refine that process and make it as trash bags. So I hope that happens.
Actually, it was...
How do we give a raspberry over this, man? Over the last 52 weeks, I swear I've read 52 separate articles saying, latest breakthrough in solar, it's going to make it cheap as oil. Bull, bull, bull. It's not happening. It's all vaporware. Look, the market for energy is so, so distorted that the only thing that can happen is the government has to get out of the energy market before you can tell anything, before you can tell whether this technology is going to make whatever energy source you're using better or worse or cheaper or more expensive. Before you can tell that, you have to get rid of the distortions. You have to end the oil subsidies. And for God's sake, we have to get rid of ethanol subsidies. Using food as fuel is just insanely stupid. But as agorists, can we depend on the government to go, hey, you know what, you're right, Voodoo, why don't we just end our welfare programs here for corn growers? No, probably not. So my agorist answer is, do not buy ethanol fuels. Do not do it. Don't allow these people to sell. They're making more off the subsidies than they are off the actual fuel per gallon.
Hear, hear.
Smuggler, would you like to comment on any of this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, renewable energy or energy sources that you can operate yourself are a total agorist topic, simply because the networks of distribution for communication, for energy, for goods and services are the prime way in which government tries to control us. That is where they get in, they regulate, and they mess up your... So even if a solar panel is less efficient, even if it's more expensive, and even if there are too many subsidies in there, putting such a thing on your rooftop makes you more independent of the government. So I'm all for it, and I'm happy about every improvement in the area.
I have a comment on that, on the regulation part, and that is in California, where there's been a huge push to install photovoltaic panels. The energy companies, actually the generation companies, the utilities, have managed to prevent many of the people who have installed these photovoltaic panels from actually selling their electricity back to the utility. And the way they did that was very clever. The regulations require that a tariff be set in order to pay the people who have the PV panels. And the utilities have been able to keep the tariff negotiations tied up for several years now, so that money is being dispersed to the people who would be selling electricity to the utilities. They're basically getting it for free now at the moment, with no tariff being set. So some of the people have thrown up their hands, and one of my friends bought a Leaf so that he could charge his car up from the excess PV that he's got, since he's not getting any money from selling it to the state.
That calls for a black market in supplying energy, black market utility services.
Yeah, but you need a distribution system to make that happen.
No, electric cars are the distribution service. You can drive an electric car. You can charge it up at your place, drive it over to the neighbor's house, and plug it into his house, and he can use the battery off your car.
So just run a few cables from roof to roof.
So the battery equivalent of a sneaker net.
Absolutely.
Hey, hero, good buddy, good pal. Can I borrow a couple kilowatts?
Oh, this is absolutely fantastic. Great. I love this show. Now on to the next segment. Failbook abstainers suspicious. So posted on Slashdot the other day, it was a nice little summary of this. According to an article, quote, according to an article printed in tagesspiegel.de, not having a Facebook account could be the first sign that you were a mass murderer. As examples, they use Norwegian shooter Anders Breivik, who used MySpace instead of Facebook, and the newer Aurora shooter, who used Adult Friend Fighter instead of Facebook. They already consider those with Facebook accounts who lack friends to be suspicious, but now they are suggesting that anyone who abstains from Facebook altogether may even be more suspicious. So, Smuggler, I would assume right now that most national governments are already have databases in the security agencies associating their citizen registry with social network accounts and social graphs of their connections. It would make complete sense for me for them to start flagging people who are not so apparent on their radar. Is there an equilibrium in tradecraft that might be a best practice so as to not to stand out or be flagged or targeted specifically while you're just trying to maintain personal privacy?
Well, of course, there are ways you can essentially create a cover identity or a legend so that you pull in data or opt-in data into Amazon or social media or Google or the ISPs so that you appear to be more of a normal person than you really are. There are even tools like auto-surfing programs that leave a track on the internet that appear to be someone really surfing. This usually happens by randomizing log data that is collected on network gateways and that is fed into the auto-surf program. However, it's not really trivial to create a persona that holds up against tight checks or even advanced automatic anomaly detection, because that is what the whole Facebook abstainer story really is about, though it does sound like a failbook marketing campaign, in my opinion. Well, today's world is moving into collecting that much data, those many data points, that it becomes possible to automatically